This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Welcome in here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is your program of choice. Thanks for making that choice. As we had a busy day here thus far at One Bills Drive, that's because GM Brandon Bean was made available to the media, as was head coach Sean McDermott, as they are in their first week of the offseason conditioning program, and we sit 1 week away from the 2024 NFL Draft. Josh Allen also addressed the media, just wrapped up. We will re-rack his comments for you, so stay tuned for that. But I think what we have to do first here, Steve, and I know this aired live earlier, but just to kind of put a bow on Brandon Bean's comments from earlier today, just before the noon hour, what would be your overriding headline on his comments if you had to put one on it?
I think it's more likely than ever they're going to move from the pick 28, but I don't know whether they're going to move up or move back.
Right.
I don't think they pick at 28. He said they didn't have as many, they had more first round grades in this draft than they did last year. I think last year they arrived at the number afterwards, it was like 18. So let's say they have like 24, 22. Just outside that 25, 23 range where they, you know, we thought they could get to trade up. Do they then trade back? And plus, the Bills' first round grades may not match the Patriots or the Cardinals or the Jets or the Dolphins or the Texans or, you know, any of those other teams. So all those other teams may want to trade up because they think those guys at 28 are first round grades. So I think it's more likely than ever the Bills trade up, trade down.
I wouldn't be lured into that necessarily. Just because Brandon Bean said they don't have 28 first-round grades on players in this draft pool doesn't mean they can't sit at 28 and get one of those 28 players, or 22
right.
players or whatever it is.
That's right.
Because their 22 players aren't the same as the 31 other teams' 22 players with first-round grades. So, I mean, Miami's GM Chris Greer said the same thing the other day. They're picking a 21, and he said, we don't have 21 first-round grades on players, but we think we'll get one of our guys at 21. Why? Because he knows there's a difference between the guys they have with first-round grades and the guys that the Pittsburgh Steelers have with first-round grades. Because at the end of the day, the most important thing in grading a player is he a fit for the Bills? Or is he a fit for the Dolphins? And the grade reflects that to some degree.
Yeah.
Not dramatically, but it's a factor. And it's what makes the grades different from one team to the next on a certain prospect. Now, does just about everybody have Marvin Harrison as a top five pick? Yes. But there are others, as you get further down, where there'll be some greater variance. So just because the Bills don't have 28 players with first-round grades doesn't mean they can't get one of their guys that they have with a first-round grade at 28, because other teams are going to differ in what they have.
That's right.
My overriding takeaway is Brandon couched it as best he can, but he knows as well as everybody else they've got to take a receiver early. He knows that. He did his best to kind of massage it in such a way to indicate, like, look, number one wideout.
Maybe not.
But, like, I'll just run through some of his comments. Here was his comment on the wide receiver contingent on the roster. I would say we have a group of guys who bring different skill sets. We like our group. It's not a glaring hole at number one wide receiver, but would we like to add to it? Yes. So they like the talent they have at receiver, but they would like to add to it. I think that's fair and obvious. So nothing earth-shattering there. On moving up or down the board, he says, you know, I'll take every call. We'll go through the various scenarios up or down next week with our staff so we're fully prepared. But right now, I couldn't tell you what's going to happen, and that's 100% true. Bean also, when asked about moving into the top 10, said no one in the top 10 has called me, and I haven't called them. But there's no rule that says I can't, but I haven't called them yet.
Right.
Which was kind of the one that got the most eyebrow lifts from the media in attendance.
He
was asked about the prospect of trading a future one, which we know he's been averse to doing. Didn't even do it to get Josh Allen.
He reiterated that today, too.
Yeah.
But
I'll never say never as far as trading a future one, but I never felt in the past, and he's referring to his days in Carolina, that we ever felt it was worth it because you get to the draft next year and you lament not having one. But we did it for Diggs, so if you feel it's worth it, heck yeah. That's what he said. So he was fence riding the best he possibly could today. It was great. And then Bean was kind of asked 17 different ways about a number one wide receiver. So his words were, we don't necessarily need a bona fide number one wide receiver for this offense. We need guys who are smart, selfless, who are going to make plays for this offense when we need one and get yards after catch. If the situation presents itself, great, but we like our group. You know, there were other comments throughout the course of, you know, his press conference, but those were the biggest ones concerning wide receiver. I think he knows. Look, Brandon knows what people on the outside say. He doesn't pay close attention to it, but I'm sure he's aware of it. And I think he knows after moving on from Diggs, I mean, the receiver need for the Bills is like, it's like Godzilla walking down through downtown Buffalo on Delaware Avenue. You can't not see it.
Right. Well, here's the thing. When you lose a good player, you want to replace him with a good player. And that's why the Diggs void is so glaring. But I do think they've got enough guys here. Yes, I think they're going to take a wide receiver. I think they may even move up to do it. But I am – and that's what I would do. But I don't know that this team – I don't know if it's going to move the needle for me one way or another if they don't, depending on who else they get. This is a draft that's deep in those guys. They're going to get at least one, probably two. The over-under is probably two. For receivers in this draft class, even if they pick all 10 spots.
Even if they reduce it to seven or eight picks, I think it's still going to be two.
And if I'll say this, if they don't take one at 28, it might be three.
I will be stunned if one of their first two picks is not a wide receiver. Stunned.
I would agree.
I think the only other realistic first-round pick for the Bills, and again, the value has to be right. We all understand that. But assuming that is the case, let's just say hypothetically there's a run on receivers that wasn't anticipated, or maybe for whatever reason the Bills don't like one of these perceived second-tier receivers as much as we think they might.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only other option there is edge rusher. And the problem with that is I think most boards that we have seen from the draft gurus only have about three or four edge rushers in round one. So it, you know, and look, we're fully expecting this to be a very offensive draft. I mean, we're expecting it to break the record, which is 19 offensive players taken in round one. That's the most ever. And I think this year will shatter that mark. So maybe they do get a look at the second, maybe the third best edge rusher in the class. I think that's the only other possibility in round one for Buffalo.
If all their draft picks come in, like where they've got the picks, fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds, and seventh, if it comes in the fourth round or later, what I would probably sit here and wait on is for them to make a little bit of a splash signing, like with, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. or Michael Gallup or Michael Thomas or one of these guys that's out there, MVS, one of those guys. They'll get a veteran who's got a little juice and see if they can do it with that way. That may be their plan. But if they don't pick a guy at 60 or 28 or don't one of those first two picks of the draft isn't a wide receiver, you almost think, okay, they've got something on the burner with one of these other guys out there that may happen, like one of those one-year deal things like, you know, Leonard Floyd was last year at defensive end. I said this yesterday. We are so rung up in this Steph Diggs trade and all that. You look at the offense, that's it. I mean, it's one wide receiver. and that's it. The entire rest of the offensive roster is good to go. Let's go. Snap it. Defensively, it's not quite the same. And that's why I you know, you kind of think, oh, okay, you're trying to think of scenarios. That may be what draws them away from it, but only for the guy, right? Only for a guy that they think, man, we'll get more out of this guy at defensive end than we would have gotten with, you know, Xavier Worthy. That I can get my mind around, because the defensive side of the ball has got a ton of question marks, and it's going to have a ton of new players, meaningful snap players, brand new. And so that's the one way I kind of like, okay, you're trying to look for the point of least resistance on not taking a wide receiver. That's it, because the whole defense is going to be changed over, and they need some talent over there. So you can say that all you want. And maybe if they do get a guy, like somebody falls to them and they get Brian Thomas Jr., do they take 9 defenders the rest of the way?
I still think they take a second one.
They probably do. They probably do.
As we told you, Josh Allen just wrapped up addressing the media here as the beginning of the offseason conditioning program got underway on Monday. And naturally, Josh was asked a lot of questions about the departure of Stephon Diggs via trade. So we wanted to bring his comments to you here on the show today. So without further ado, here is Bills quarterback Josh Allen.
Brandon had told us that he had spoken to you prior to trading Stephon, I think, to alert you that it was a possibility. And then post making that move, just what is your reaction to moving on from a guy that you've had a lot of success with the last 4 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard to part ways with a guy that's been very instrumental in our success here over the last 4 years. And again, I can't thank him enough for when he came in and how hard he worked and what he taught me along the years. And obviously, I wish we can keep everybody. You know, we've made a lot of changes this offseason, lost a lot of veteran leadership, Steph being one of them. I guess that's the nature of the business. And going into year 7 now, it just kind of is what it is. You know, I don't get paid to make changes on the team. I get paid to be the best quarterback that I can be and try to lead the guys on this team.
Have you spoke with Steph since the move was made?
Yeah, I shared a text with him and got one back, and just thanking him for everything that he did for me, and always have a spot in my heart for him, and I always love that guy like a brother, and you know, wish him nothing but the best.
What, as you just said there, and really you've been consistent throughout in being having a lot of praise for Stephon and what he has meant to you and to the team. That being said, there was a sense that of maybe just outside speculation, is he happy, is he unhappy? Why do you think that seemed to linger over the team for as long as it did?
I mean, to be honest, I couldn't answer that question. It's you know, it's something you may have to ask him at some point. But again, I think with this, there is a lot of opportunity for our guys that are in that room right now and as an offense and really as a team to evolve and grow and become a new version of the Buffalo Bills and to come together as a team over the course of OTAs is what we're doing right now. And, you know, we got a lot of time before we kick off the first game, so a lot to learn from. You know, even going back and look at some of the concepts that we're doing right now and just cleaning those up, it feels – obviously it's frustrating to look back and see some of the stuff that was on tape, especially for myself, but excited to address those and move forward and get better.
What did Josh mean to you over this 4-year switch? And how much more confident are you in your abilities to be able to offset that type of a loss?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, he meant a lot. You look at the statistics, you know, they don't lie. Numbers don't lie. So, you know, but like I said a few minutes ago, it's an opportunity for those guys that we have in our room, bringing in guys like Curtis and Mac, and having Khalil and Dalton and Dawson and guys that have been in the system for a while that know how things go. And within the system, like, anybody can get the ball at any given time, and these guys are very excited for that. They're working extremely hard. It's good to see these guys here. Again, get to know some of these younger guys better, and looking forward to, you know, getting to know them as best as I can so we can, you know, use that on the field.
Josh mentioned losing the leader in Stephon. step as well. What do you need to see from other offensive guys to maybe step up from a leadership perspective? You know, so it's not just all on you. When you lose, you know, a lot of other veterans from Mitch Morse, two guys like that. Like, how do you look at younger guys to step up? Do you talk to them about it? I know you talk about leading by example, but I guess how do you
Yeah, I think it's an opportunity for myself to grow as a leader and to bring along some of these young guys or new guys that we've brought into our team. And that's an opportunity, frankly, that I'm very excited about. You know, it's something that is going to be very challenging, but I'm very willing to do it. You know, and having, you know, Coach McDermott, having a second year with Joe Brady, you know, being in my seventh season now, being here, it's kind of crazy to think that I'm going into my seventh season. I feel like, you know, I haven't sat too many times up in front of you guys, you know, at the start of OTA. So, but again, it's just another opportunity for me to go out there and be the guy that I'm supposed to be and the guy that I believe I am. And, you know, I'm going to need guys along the way, but I think the most important thing that I need from this team is guys to just continue to work hard and buy into what we're doing here and trust the process, as Coach McDermott always preaches, and, you know, us trusting in being in what he's doing and bringing the right guys in and just trying to utilize those guys as best as we can.
Josh, in the history of the league, when a quarterback stays for a while with a team, it almost is like they play with almost a totally second team and some guys even like a third team. There's not that many guys who've been around as long as you have here. Does it almost feel like going into this year it's like at that second stage of your career with a bunch of new guys?
I guess you can say that. You know, I've been here with Micah and Poe since I've been here, right? And to lose those guys is going to hurt in terms of the leadership aspect, in terms of the familiarity that I have with coming in and being able to talk with them, not just about football, but about life. So again, finding somebody, you know, isn't easy, but trusting the guys that we have in this room, having a new center, you know, not having Mitch. You know, Gabe was so good for us for the time that he was here and such a presence in our locker room. But again, we still have some guys that have played some really good football over the course of their careers, and having a guy like Von Miller who's been there and done that and been to the pinnacle, been to the top, bringing in Mike, who's also done the same thing for two of the teams that he's played for, and, you know, relying on some of these guys that have seen what it takes and going to be able to utilize their knowledge for this team as well. You know, and I don't think it's a wrong thing or a bad thing to get younger. You know, I think that as a coaching staff, as a leader, to be able to come and kind of mold these guys into the team that you want to be, I think is a very exciting opportunity. And again, it takes two to tango. You need to have the right guys that are willing to come in and work hard and do things the right way, which I can confidently say in this locker room right now, you know, we have those guys.
How are you health-wise, especially your shoulder?
Very good. Yeah, really good. Obviously taking the last month and a half to kind of relax, let the body get back to it. You know, later in, you know, the last half of the season, especially the last four or five games, really felt like got back to what I felt like was, you know, close to 100%. You know, started feeling like I was playing like myself again, and didn't take too many hits towards the end of the season. So went into the off season, you know, relatively healthy, and then feel like I've gotten some PT work, you know, throughout the last couple months, and making sure that I'm just staying on top of that, and making sure my body's as best shape it can be.
Josh, talk about Josh being thankful for the things that Stephon taught you. What would you say are some of the things that you learned from his time here with you?
Well, again, I think. You know, the concepts that we were able to put in, the concepts that we were able to run with him, his mentality, the way that he attacked each and every practice, you know, it was very infectious, especially for the young guys seeing that. So that's what I would say.
Josh, Brandon Bean said that he was going to take a receiver in every round in this draft. You playing with a Stephon Diggs, you playing with a John Brown and Nicole Beasley, you pretty much got an idea of what type of receiver that you're looking to play with in the future. Can you possibly tell us some characteristics of that?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of talented guys in this draft. It kind of goes without saying. And, you know, I wish I could tell you we're moving up or moving back or staying put and who's going to be there. I honestly don't know. I'm doing my own evals right now and trying to lean Bean one way or another. But honestly, it just kind of depends on the direction of what this offense wants to be, you know, with Joe and myself, and understanding how we would utilize certain guys if we did pick them, and how we're going to utilize the guys that are here, you know. And I think, again, you talk about having talent. I think bringing in Curtis Samuel, the different things that he can do, pairing him along with Khalil, who's, you know, came along last year, especially later half of the season, him coming to his, you know, third year and getting better as time goes on, having Dalton and Dawson and seeing what they can get, what they can do. So bringing in somebody that pairs with those guys. But again, it depends on really what we want to be as an offense to see who's going to be the best fit. And right now I couldn't tell you that.
Josh, Brandon said that you like the draft, and he likes that you like the draft, and we know that from years past. What is your communication? You see, like, how does it work? Do you see a guy? Do you hear the guy's name? You look at him, you call Brandon and go, hey, what are you thinking here? How does all that work?
Yeah, I mean, I look at all the highlight tapes on YouTube, so everyone's a baller, you know, on those highlights. But, you know, going down and actually watching all their targets and seeing their mannerisms. And obviously I'm not there in the personal meetings, but I get a lot of intel from the guys up in the bullpen. And I will say this, last year, draft day, I sent Bean a text, said, Dalton Kincaid, that's all I said. You know, felt like that the draft day moment when Kevin Costner opens his thing and it says Vontae Mack no matter what. It was Dalton Kincaid no matter what last year. So I'd like to think that I have some input in who we get to pick, but honestly, I really don't. So,
given the numbers that you and Steph did put up, what regret might there be in knowing that you rewrote the offensive record book but couldn't get to the Holy Land per se?
Yeah, I would say that's the regret, is not winning one. And obviously, I played this game. And the other 52 guys in that locker room played this game to win Super Bowls, and we want to bring one very badly here to Western New York, and that's my number one goal. That's all I'm working for and I'm working towards right now, is figuring out how and what it takes to get us over that hump and bring one back, and we're going to work tirelessly until we do.
Josh, no Steph, no Gabe, no Mitch, so obviously the room looks different, the leaders look different. Who do you see in that room, that side of the ball, that's ready to take a bigger step as a leader moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about guys that are working extremely hard, you know, I think last year especially, Dion and Spence, how hard they worked and how well they played, obviously garnered a lot of attention, and guys respect that. Guys see that. You look at Khalil and what he was able to do in a limited role and stepping up late. And again, guys that play the game the right way, it's kind of an unspoken rule. You tend to follow those guys. Guys that follow the ball, guys that make the extra block, guys that don't care if he scores or he scores, as long as we're winning football games. And sometimes it's not your best player, but sometimes it's your hardest worker that steps up and can say something, and guys respect that. So, you know, we have a few of those guys on this team right now, and how it unfolds is how it unfolds, and I'm anxious to see how it does.
As you mentioned.
All right, so that's Bills quarterback Josh Allen addressing the media just a short time ago. Wanted to play you the main portion of his comments. And, of course, he was having fun with draft day last year. Dalton Kincaid was all that was read on the text to Brandon Bean on draft day.
Called it.
But, yeah, I think later on in the press conference, you know, he was asked, you know, what Stephon Diggs did the best here, and he basically said he's thankful that he helped make him a better player. So I think Josh said all the right things today about Stephon Diggs, who is, you know, now in Houston after the trade. And I think he's also right about some young leaders that are going to have to step forward, because sure, Mitch Morris had been a captain, Jordan Poyer had been a captain, Micah Hyde had been a captain, Stephon Diggs had been a captain, Gabe Davis had been a captain, mm-hmm, and they're all out the door now. So there is a leadership void, but it sounds like, based on what Josh said, they already have some guys in mind to assume some of that leadership. I would put Deion Dawkins in that category. You heard Josh Allen mention Spencer Brown as well on the offensive side of the ball.
Right.
So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, it's never easy when you come back and you realize there's going to be some pretty significant players out of the locker room. And it takes a while for it to become normal again. You got to get used to the new normal. It's like rehabbing an injury. Mm-hmm. You got to get used to the way your body feels now. And same thing in the locker room and in the, as a team. Now, they do this every year as well, that when they start coming back for these OTAs and mini camps and stuff, they'll start to do team building exercise. So guys will slowly start to get to know each other and be able to talk to each other, call each other by name, sit down and, you know, and have a conversation. You get into a routine where you see them all the time and you talk to them all the time and you become friends. Takes a while and it's new. Brandon said today, you know, change is, you know, it's hard, but it's not always bad. And I think that's the mentality of these guys, and I'm sure they're typical of most NFL locker rooms. You tend to spin it positive, say this is going to be great, let's go.
Well,
and you kind of get enthused about a new team.
Yeah, and head coach Sean McDermott, whose comments we'll hear a little bit later on in the show, kind of echoed that, saying, you know, that's kind of what the off-season conditioning program and OTAs are about, getting the new guys around the guys that have been here and starting the blend of putting that team together for the 2024 season, because as you hear Coach McDermott say time and time again, every year is different, and this one, it might be more different than most in the Bean McDermott era, just due to the player turnover alone. And so being here this time of year and getting to know each other is part of the all-important process, and it's at work, even as we speak. Topic of discussion for you today, though, you heard Brandon Bean's comments about wide receiver and the draft and their inclinations, what they feel they need, how important it is to add a bona fide receiver that could grow into the number one role. He didn't make it sound like it's the end-all, be-all.
He said he was like, but,
if we could, we absolutely would.
Sure, maybe.
So with that in mind, we're asking you today, who do we expect to be added to the Bills wide receiver room now?
We're making fun of it because Brownie is, he's a hard guy. He's a typical hard guy journalism, cynical New York kind of Long Island. And he's like, he doesn't believe Brandon Bean. Just let me put it that way.
Oh, I believe Brandon Bean. I think he's one of the most self-effacing general managers in the league. I mean, he shoots as straight as he possibly can, which is saying a lot compared to some other GMs in this
league. But Brownie is giving the vibe that he believes that Brandon Bean is hell-bent on getting a wide receiver.
Well, and I think a lot of other people feel that way, too. There are certain things sitting up there that he has to say. You know, he has to couch some things. The only GM that didn't was Buddy Nix. You know, I mean, that guy shot too straight.
Yeah.
Like, he told you everything they were going to do and then did it.
Yeah.
So there was no secret with him. At least there is an air of secrecy to some extent here, with Brandon.
Well, I mean, the last thing you want to do is tell a room full of people. If you want to keep some things quiet and you don't want to tell everything, the last people you want to tell are the room full of people that he speaks to once a week or once every season at this time, whose job it is to tell everybody else what you said.
Yeah.
So, that's football 101.
But we want to know from you, who, after hearing Brandon Bean's comments today or reading them on Twitter or whatever other outlet you chose to digest them, who do we expect to be added to the Bills wide receiver room? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. If you can't reach us there, there's always the tweet sheet at 1BillsLive. Fire off a comment to us. Based on Brandon Bean's comments, who do you think is going to be in that Bills receiver room next week by Friday? We take a break here, but plenty more coming up on the show, including head coach Sean McDermott, who addressed the media today, and NFL Network executive producer Charlie Uke in hour number two to lay out NFL Network's draft coverage next week from Detroit. Plenty more coming your way here on 1BillsLive. Stay with us. We're asking you, who do we expect to be added to the Bills wide receiver room? We heard Brandon Bean's comments today. He was asked a number of questions about their outlook, not only at the wide receiver class, but the current state of their wide receiver room. They said they like the group, but if they could add to it, they'd like to. And I know that comes as no surprise, but he had a lot of other things to say, so we want to know from you who you think they would be most interested in adding to that wide receiver room. We lead off with Tim in Charlotte. What's up, Tim?
Yeah, hey, guys. Appreciate you having me on again. I just wanted to comment and say that I really, truly think there's some form of honesty with Brandon Bean. I don't think that it's fully a smokescreen, him saying that we don't need a true bona fide number one. I think that with Joe Brady, I think they're going to really spread the ball around, and I think they like guys who can do multiple things. You know, it's a matchup league, kind of a chess match every single week, and I think that even if you guys have a couple guys who have redundant skill sets, what comes to mind for me is like a Khalil Shakir, Ladd McConkey, Curtis yep. Samuel, things like that. But you can deploy them in five different ways. I think that that's going to be a really good thing for the Bills. And Brandon Bean and Josh Allen both kind of said it themselves that, you know, there's a lot of opportunity coming up for this offense, and this is a new look for them. So I'm very intrigued. I don't have a particular person on who I want them to add, but I think that there's a little bit of honesty today. I don't think it was all smokescreen, and I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, I think he's one of the most straightforward GMs in the league when it comes to addressing the media and giving answers. He doesn't just give the media something they can chew on. I think there is a lot of truth in what he feels comfortable divulging. We know he can't divulge everything. That's unrealistic, but I think he's one of the more self-effacing GMs that I've ever been around. And the comment that sticks with me the most is when he said today, we don't necessarily need a bona fide number one wide receiver for this offense. We need guys who are smart, selfless, who are going to make plays when we need one and get yards after catch if it presents itself. And he said they like their group, but they are looking to add to it, which I don't think is any secret.
Yeah. I would agree. They can like their group and still think that they need somebody there to add some talent. They may not be sure that it's talented enough to get it done or that it couldn't be improved. And I think in this point in history, I kind of have to agree with them. That side of the ball, meaning offense, is a little, it carries some weight that defense doesn't. Pass rushers, okay. Corners, okay. Everybody else, not so much. I mean, they rank down the priority list in this day and age of the NFL. We say it all the time. It is an arms race with Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence, Tua Tagovailoa, Aaron Rodgers. You go down the list, Anthony Richardson, C.J. Stroud. You go down the list, you got to keep up. You're going to have to score points in this league to keep up. And all these teams have those quarterbacks that I just named that can make something out of nothing. We've seen Josh do it, I mean, countless times to the tune of like a couple of hundred touchdowns in his career so far. You call the perfect defense, and I don't care if you got 11 Hall of Famers out there. This guy turns it into a touchdown. Pat Mahomes turns it into a touchdown. You know, Lamar Jackson outruns it, just turns it into a touchdown. So defense is really difficult to play these days. So yeah. It's easy to say you got to have both sides of the ball, but in this day and age, you got to have all your guns blazing on offense.
And while I respect what Tim's point is that there isn't any receiver that they wouldn't consider, I agree with that. But at the same time, at 28 in round one, we know the history here. It's about elite physical traits. And if they can't get that and the value on the board for elite physical traits at wide receiver is absent, they will look elsewhere, like edge rusher and then maybe address receiver in round two. That's the only way I think they move off of it, if the value is not right. Let's go to Mark in Tonawanda next. What's up, Mark?
Hi, guys. I think that the Bills should just stay where they are. Quit playing, you know, don't play games with the draft. Moving up to get a super player like Josh Allen is a once-in-a-lifetime move. But for the most part, staying at 28 and whatever on your draft, there is a plethora of receivers in the draft. I personally like this. What is his name? McConkey from Georgia. I think he's a super receiver. And teams that are always playing games with the draft wind up being the Chicago's or the Buffalo Bills from 17 years of not being anywhere in the football game. I think we should just stay where we are and don't play games.
All right. Fair enough, Mark. I know McConkey's a popular guy. I would say, and we've taken calls on this, some have said he's too much like Khalil Shakir. You need something different in the mix. I'm not saying I would be upset if they took Ladd McConkey. I think he's going to be a successful NFL player, but I understand the sentiment. You need a guy that can consistently line up outside. Not saying McConkey can't do that, but I think there are better options probably ahead of him in the pecking order that can fulfill that role maybe a little more effectively. Because I'm going to tell you right now, there are some people that just flat out believe press coverage, which is far more physical in the NFL, could be an issue for him. He's 184 pounds. So, you know, and he's 5'11". And so he does have quickness. I think his ideal place is the slot. And I'm not saying he can't be a successful NFL player. I think he will be. But there are detractors out there about him. And I think that's why he's considered a borderline round one, round two talent.
Yeah, and he might be the kind of receiver that Brandon Bean was talking about when he says you got to have a guy that fits your scheme. And here's the thing. If you put, for instance, let's all do it in our mind's eye, and Brownie and I do this all the time, and Bills fans are notorious for this. You plug a guy like Ladd McConkey into the Bills offense with Kincaid and Shakir and Curtis Samuel, and it strikes me as Josh will be playing darts. I mean, it'll be a dink and dunk, move the chains offense, and Josh will get big plays when he pulls it down and runs with it. It's hard to picture anybody having the skill set to go over the top consistently. Now, maybe you can just send a guy deep. They got to cover anybody that goes deep, but you're not going to get anybody deep that's going to be open. So I'm kind of thinking that would undercut one of your quarterback's best attributes, and that's the strength of his arm and the fact that he can threaten the field, every inch of the field, from wherever the line of scrimmage is, right?
Yeah.
So I think a guy like McConkey, while he's a good player, and I think I agree with Brownie, you got one. And
Shakir's that guy.
And that's a spot. Well, if you're going to draft him number one, McConkey at number one, you're not going to like, you're not going to cut him, you know? I mean, so what are you going to do with Khalil Shakir? Is he going to get on that? And the both of them on the field at the same time? I mean, that kind of, to me, speaks of, you know, hitch routes and crossing
routes. You need diversification. So it's a long way of saying you need a diversification in your offense.
Yeah, with different I just don't think you'll have enough skill sets with McConkey mixed with the guys they already have.
Let's go to Elliot in Rochester next. What's up, Elliot?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So a lot of the same stuff that some of the other callers are saying, I do want to push back on the, you know, we think back to the Dorsey years, right, and the offensive attack attempted to be more downfield, and at times it was successful and other times not. And then last year in the playoffs when we needed someone who could go deep, right, we needed to have a deeper passing attack, and we kind of fell short, especially in that playoff game versus Kansas City. But some of the other guys that are more of like the second round, third round grades, or even maybe fourth, fifth round grades, like Javon Baker, Tremaine Burton, maybe even Malachi Corley, or how about even Christian McCaffrey's brother, Luke McCaffrey, mm-hmm. coming from a proven athletic family there, maybe even Ricky Pearsall. But I think the best move is maybe if we do have a guy we love at the end of the first round, to go that route, or if we go defensive, that's not a bad move either. I mean, we got Rousseau a few years back late in the first round, and he's proven to be a great player. So we see the value that defense can add there. But I've finally shifted to that second, third, fourth round, maybe even trade up into the second round again, get 2 second round type of receivers, moving up with some of those extra fourth and fifth round picks. I really think that's probably the best strategy. If we follow the mold that the Packers did, they brought in
Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, all second, third, fourth round guys. And you don't look at that team in Green Bay and say, holy crap, they've got, you know, studs to throw the ball to, but rather they've got just a bunch of different guys that piece together very well. And just looking at the Bills offense currently, with James Cook and Josh Allen being great at running the ball effectively, even bringing in another big back to help Ty Johnson, maybe Ray Davis out of Kentucky or Audric Estime, bigger guys that can, you know, diversify that run game. But there's plenty of good receivers in this draft, especially in that second, third round territory. So I think it was necessarily smoke screens what they're talking about. And like it was touched on, it's all about getting the right personality fit, the right attitude fit. Yep. For Buffalo, to avoid those kinds of issues that, you know, might have been there in the past or may not have been, but definitely not a panic situation if they don't trade up and try to get one of the elite guys. Because at the end of the day, how many teams in the NFL have an elite guy like the Vikings do, Justin Jefferson, and it just proves to not be enough because it's always about how the entire offense is operating. So. Yeah. Curious on your thoughts, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
And looking forward to listening.
Yeah, a lot packed in there, Elliot. I will say I don't know that two twos are realistic by trading up. I think that's more realistic by moving back and out of round one. I anticipate that if they do move up the board on day two, they're going to try to add a third round pick. That was a pick they hoped to have all along anyway. And I thought power back was something Brandon Bean was asked about today. He understands why people feel they need to add that because Latavius Murray and Damian Harris no longer on the roster, and he didn't deny that that would be good to add, but he said we're not backing ourselves into a corner that it's got to only be a power back. They said as long as we can take the most talented back on the board, that's what's more important, but if it happens to be a power back, well, then gravy. It's a bonus.
Yeah. You'd love to be in a spot where you can take whatever the best player is at any point. But, you know, you've got all these picks from the fourth round down, and certainly there's some cachet there. This is a very deep draft for some of these players in the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds to come in and contribute. But make no mistake, the Bills have we said it yesterday. We had it on. That was our topic yesterday. What's the minimum you got to get out of this draft? You can't walk out of this draft without somebody in the top from 28 or 60 that can step on and help you.
Yeah,
you gotta get better, and you gotta get physically talented guys to do that, and that's at the top of the draft.
Got to take a break here, but more of your phone calls when we return here on One Bills Live. Stay with us. All right, who do we expect to be added to the Bills' wide receiver room? You heard Brandon Bean's comments today as he addressed the media just before the noon hour. So you let us know. What did his words tell you the Bills are going to add to the Bills' wide receiver room? 803-0550, the number to get on board. Let's go to Seth in Buffalo next. What's up, Seth?
It's Jeff.
Oh, sorry, Jeff. Yeah, I'm just reading the names that are on here. Sorry about that.
That's all right, man. I'm going to beat the same drum that has been already beaten. I think Ladd McConkey is the guy that Josh would like to have. Because I think he's Cole Beasley 2.0, except that he can get the yards after catch. He can get those yak yards that everybody likes. And I think he can also stretch the field, as well as Shakir. I think they can both possibly stretch the field. And I also think that Curtis Samuels is somebody that I think that Brandon Bean, I could be wrong, I don't know, but I think Brandon Bean thinks that he is going to be Steph Diggs' replacement. I think he thinks that he could be the number one guy because, you know, they got him and then they let Diggs go. I think that he thinks that having him with a better quarterback could turn him into a number one guy. And the same as Diggs helped Josh, I think Josh can help Samuels. And I think, like I said, I think Ladd McConkey is, you know, the Cole Beasley type guy that Josh depended on for a long time.
Yeah.
So there you go, and that's it.
I get what you're saying, Jeff. Yeah, no problem. I get what you're saying. As we've discussed earlier, though, I think they have that guy already, and you even mentioned him, Shakir. Go watch Shakir's last four games in a Bills uniform. Go watch him. I'm encouraging you. He was essentially, him and Kincaid were the top guys in the offense. I know Diggs had a nice game against the Dolphins in the AFC division title game in week 18. But Shakir was instrumental in helping them win that game. He was instrumental in the playoffs. I mean, the touchdown he had against the Chiefs by the front pylon.
Yeah.
The shake and bake to put Michael Walker, the linebacker for the Steelers, on his rear end in the red zone there. I mean, those were huge, huge plays, and we saw the dynamic nature of his game. You already have Ladd McConkey. It's Khalil Shakir. Right. That's who he is. And then as, you want to address Samuel because that's a guy that's never had a chance to be a number one guy, but has three seasons of over 50 catches, two over 60 as a number two receiver.
Right. And he's been playing with not Josh Allen. So
exactly. He's played with Sam Howell, Teddy Bridgewater, and Tyler Heinicke.
Yeah. So we'll see. I can get on that bandwagon, Jeff, but you're right. I'm anxious to see what Curtis Samuel can do with Josh Allen at quarterback and Joe Brady as offensive coordinator. Khalil Shakir, to me, proved his worth last year. Khalil Shakir had a better year in Buffalo at the end of the season last year. He had a better year in Buffalo than Ladd McConkey did in Georgia. Because he was doing it against playoff teams on a run where they had to win to stay in it, and he was helping. And the new offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, unlocked a lot of things in this offense that we didn't know were there last year.
I'm just going to remind everybody, second half of the Chiefs game, Steve Spagnuolo put Lejarius Sneed on Khalil Shakir, just to give you an idea on where things were right. going at the end of the season in the pecking order of this receiving corps. Put Lejarius Sneed on Khalil Shakir. He's going to explode this year. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, Khalil Shakir exploded onto the scene at the end of the year last year.
Yeah. Let's squeeze in Leslie in Buffalo here before the break. What do you got for us, Leslie?
How you doing, Chris?
Good.
Hey, Steve.
Hey.
I'm wondering if we can't draft the receivers that we really, really, really want. Could we put a package together? Go steal one of Joe Burrow's receivers, T. Higgins. We have two veterans. You think that could work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thought, Leslie, but we've already heard from T. Higgins himself and from the Bengals organization. They've publicly said he is not going to be available for trade. Now, if you put together an offer they can't refuse, I suppose things could change there. But it sounds as though the Bengals want to run it back one more time with Chase and Higgins as their franchise-tagged player and go into 2024 with a healthy Joe Burrow and try to see if they can get back to the Super Bowl with that triumvirate on offense one last time. They know they're not going to keep Higgins after this year.
They're paying Higgins $21 million this year.
Yeah.
So you got to make his deal more attractive than that. That's hard to do at this point of the game. When you've got all these draft picks out there. And the price you would have to pay to get him off that roster would be exorbitant, almost like going up to the top 10 of this draft. So I'm saying, yes, it's a good idea. He's a great player, but you're not going to get it done.
Yeah. Break time for us here. When we come back, hour number two will begin with NFL Network executive producer Charlie Uke, who joins us to lay out the draft coverage live from Detroit next week on Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday. We'll catch up with him before we get back to your phone calls here at One Bills Live. Stay with us.
This is One Bills Live, presented by
Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome to hour number two here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to welcome in executive producer from NFL Network, Charlie Youp, joining the show as he lays out the three-day sojourn that will be NFL Network's coverage of the 2024 NFL Draft live from the Motor City in Detroit. Charlie, how are you doing, and when are you heading out to the Motor City?
Always great to be with you boys on One Bills Live. We are ready to go to give not only Bills fans, but everyone watching on NFL Network at 8 o'clock Eastern on Thursday, April 25th, a great experience for the draft. I head out on Monday the 22nd. We've already got a lot of people boots on the ground in Detroit. Ready to go, so fire away.
Give us an idea. How big a cast are we looking at over the 3 days?
Yeah, we boosted our numbers, Steve. We've got a lot of increased shoulder programming. I know Bills fans are fans of Good Morning Football. That took a little hiatus. We're bringing GMFB back Thursday, Friday, Saturday from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern next week. Kyle Brandt will be out boots on the ground. Peter Schrager, Jason McCourty will be on camera. Jane Slater is going to be hosting that week, as we all know. Jamie Erdahl had a baby, so congrats again to Jamie and her baby. So we'll be back in full force there. The regular casting characters, night one, Rich Eisen, Daniel Jeremiah, Charles Davis, Joel Klatt, Ian Rappaport. This year we have Emmy-nominated Keely Hartung doing our stage interviews. So we're ready to rock and roll.
Right. And I think the cool thing, you know, you've kind of partnered with ESPN to have some crossover commentators, you know, going back and forth. What kind of extra layering and insight do you feel that kind of brings to the production?
Yeah. You know, Chris, I'm just trying to put my league hat on there too for us. We're just trying to make the draft as big as we can. So having Mel Kiper on Total Access on Tuesday, or Field Yates on Path to Draft on Wednesday, or Steve Smith Sr. on the 6 o'clock Sports Center, Mina Kimes doing Move the Sticks podcast today, Kurt Warner and Daniel Jeremiah doing Get Up and NFL Live respectively tomorrow. It only makes this event feel bigger. The draft, as everyone knows, is all about hope. It's driven by the players that are going to be in the selection process. And we're fortunate this year that top-heavy teams and big markets have quarterback needs. So anything we can do together with ABC and ESPN and ourselves to boost this event is considered to be a plus. I like doing our part. They are great partners in this. So whether you're watching on NFL Network, ESPN, or ABC, we hope that there are as many eyeballs as we can. It's almost like election coverage, right? You choose whatever you want to choose. We have our different tendencies of how we present the event, but hopefully the event itself has a big number, and that's the goal of doing that kind of stuff.
First of all, what's the venue? What is the actual venue where the stage is going to be set up? And what about the green room? What's that set up? How many guys have you got to say yes to be there?
Yeah, so the venue's directly downtown, Steve. The theater's being built right now. So ESPN and NFL Network will have a theater set. ABC, and then our second set on NFL Network will be right outside about 100 yards from there. The green room, I don't have the name specifically, but 13 players have accepted a bid to the green room that got released last week. But all the big names will be there: Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Marvin Harrison Jr. So there's a lot of star power here. It's a large footprint. I think you could probably say it can look similar to Philadelphia in 2017. Although Philly was on the steps of museums, we're looking at upwards like 300,000 pre-registered guests have put their names in to arrive to have some sort of footprint out there. So the scene is going to be huge. Detroit, as we all know, is experiencing a boon here with the Lions being the leaders of the North. So we expect a big crowd with a as big a footprint as we had in Philadelphia in 17, if those fans remember what that looked like. But it's going to be a scene.
Yeah, how much – I know there isn't any precip, at least in the forecast, for Thursday and Friday. How much do you have to make weather a consideration with an operation this size?
Yeah, it's a good question. We have backup contingency in Los Angeles. The goal is never to come to Los Angeles during the draft when this happens, but our main set is weatherproof. The one thing we can't control is the weather. Right now it looks like some showers, but nothing out of the ordinary, thunderstorms or, God forbid, knock on wood, any sort of other high winds or anything else. But we're good to go, rain or shine. It's a rain or shine event. And I think we're going to be ready to tip at 8 o'clock Eastern on Thursday.
What's your biggest fear?
You know what, Steve? Chalk. if there's no movement and there's nothing going on, like we want, I think we've said this before and the many times we've done this, we want some chaos at the top. We want a surprise pick, maybe at two. Maybe there's a trade right at three. Maybe a surprise team moves up there. My biggest fear is just everything kind of going the way it does, not much movement. This event is better when there is chaos, when people audibly gasp, whether there's a move at the top or the bottom. Those are the best drafts that I've experienced. I think those are the best drafts that the fans experience. Not fans of those teams, maybe, that are palpitating whether or not, what is this move, the right move or the wrong move. But, you know, truly, fear is, you know, something that's not necessarily real. We all develop that in our heads. So regardless of what happens, I think this draft is so loaded with the names that people recognize over the years and these major market, major fan bases that are dying to become anything like the Bills at this point, that get that franchise cornerstone, a quarterback or anyone else. So I feel, you know, we feel pretty confident that there should be some excitement at the top. And who knows, right? You guys have heard more than I have, but there's going to be a lot of movement for these quarterbacks.
And I know that day three is the longest of the 3 days when you guys have already been at it for two late nights. What is typically the fuel of choice that you find amongst your cast, your crew, to kind of power through day three, especially knowing those guys in the truck have to be sharp for stub the truck late in the draft, et cetera?
Yes. So typically we try to get the local fare wherever we are on day three. So I mentioned Philly. It was a heavy cheesesteak day on day three there. Detroit will be a lot of Detroit-style pizza. Look, if the draft ever comes to Buffalo, I can guarantee you wings will be there on day three. So we're talking a heavy amount of Detroit-style pizza. Being from Chicago, I actually like Detroit-style pizza. It's pretty good. So that'll fuel us. But, you know, Chris, you bring up a great point. Stump the Truck is something that'll entertain our viewers. Run Rich Run, which is his great charity for 20 years that he's done with St. Jude, raising money for that. And then we have our second year for you dog lovers in Buffalo. Our second year of puppy adoptions will happen live on air. We had great success with that last year in Kansas City. We're going to do it again this year with the Michigan Humane Society. So puppies will be available for adoption. I believe that can be delivered statewide on Saturday. Great, so that's something to look into. But yeah, pizza is the way to go for us, Mom.
How much pre-recorded programming are you going to have? And I know it's a live event and, you know, all the picks will be live and you'll be reactions and all that once it gets going. How much before the draft are you going to start? Do you have any feature stories that you're going to lead up to the draft with? Is there going to be any pre-recorded feature stories at all in this, or is this going to be live and let's go?
Most of the stuff we're targeting to, Steve, is going to be live. We have 60 hours of live programming that week. There are some great features. Right now at the top of my head, I can't think of one right now, so I apologize, but there is a special one that I know that we've been working on. A great, let's just say, unified moment at 8 o'clock Eastern where ABC, ESPN, and NFL Network will share and hopefully a jaw-dropping moment to start the draft. That's all I can say. It's a big secret to what happens.
Really?
It might actually drop tomorrow, a little bit of a nugget, but we're all excited. Again, we're working with our partners here, and ESPN did a great job kind of corralling all this stuff. So that's the biggest thing. But as far as live programming, we've got 60 hours. And then the usual pre and post game. We're on the air. Like I said, Good Morning Football. We're happy that it's back. Draft week. We start at 7 a.m. Thursday. We won't end until after midnight on Thursday when draft is over with Total Access post game. So, you know, long days, as you said, the fuel's important, but we're ready to go. We're ready. You know, you guys asked about tapes. Like, we have over 500 players. We have almost 1,500 individual tapes ready to go. We've got 30 cameras, 13 talent. Pre-game, during the game, post-game, we're everywhere. So I just can't wait to get it there. And honestly, I can't wait for not just, like I said, Bills fans, but everyone else to get excited. Yeah. It is the ground rule of the offseason.
Yeah, way to drop the tease trailer very casually great. There. That was good. Like the tease on the trailer. We'll have to keep an eye out for that. All right, so very quickly, Charlie, before we let you go, just why don't you just repeat the start times for night one, two, and three, just so everybody remembers, because sometimes people have a little disconnect between night two and day three especially.
Yep, so Thursday, April 25th, we're tipping off at 8 p.m. Eastern, live on NFL Network. Friday, April 26th, we're tipping off at 7 p.m. Eastern. and Saturday, April 27th, noon Eastern tip-off.
Okay.
Do not miss what happens at 8 o'clock Eastern on Thursday. It will be a very, very, very special
one. All right. Sounds cool. Awesome. Charlie, thanks for giving us the 411 once again. Good luck in hitting it out of the park from start to finish. We'll be watching.
Thank you, fellas. Thank you. Always appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
All right.
You.
That's thanks, Charlie Uke, executive producer from NFL Network, who will be running the ship on the NFL Network side of the ledger. Obviously, ESPN, ABC will also have some coverage. And, you know, the networks are all partnering as this is very much for the league and all in, all hands on deck.
So 8 p.m. event. Thursday, set a DVR. That sounds like quite the deal. Listen, when all the people who made it are excited about it, it's probably pretty special, probably because not only the content but also who took part in it. There's probably going to be some legendary figures in this, I would probably think too. It centers on guys like the Detroit guys like Barry Sanders and all those dudes.
It might be Calvin some history Johnson in there.
And some history and all that when they were drafted. How it went? Oh my gosh! Let's go. All about it.
We forgot to ask him about how Detroit might, the city itself might be incorporated into the production as well. We know they always do a good job of kind of embracing the city in which they're operating. So he mentioned Detroit style pizza, but, is Smokey Robinson rolling in at some point? Eminem,
Motown,
who's and coming in? Kid Rock,
let's go, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot in it. Detroit has been waiting for this for a while too, because that's the thing too. When you get a long lead time, they can start planning stuff and get things all lined out. Stars like that can clear their schedule to be ready and be a part of it. And let's face it, I mean, the NFL is a great vehicle for all these people who are in show business of any kind. And that's let's go, man.
Yeah, it's good crossover territory for them.
Awesome.
Let's get back to the phones though at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. You heard from General Manager Brandon Bean earlier today, had a lot to say on the wide receiver class, the Bills' current wide receiver roster. Based on his comments, who do we expect to be added to the Bills' wide receiver room? We go back to the phones and to Butch on the east side. What do you got for us, Butch?
Gentlemen, thanks so much for taking my call. I'm just going to say this to you. I think last week I spoke to you guys and I said the pedigree that I want for the Buffalo Bills is somebody who wants a yellow jacket. And now I'm going to stick to that about this player, the two players I'm about to speak about. If Buffalo at the 28, I know Steve in his chart, and Chris, you too, said it would be kind of tough to get Carolina's 33 and 39. But if we take the 28, throw maybe a 4, maybe a 5 next year, to get that 33 and 39, we still have 60. Those three, that'd be like our third round pick. But the reason I say that is I'm still going to stick to my players that I want the Bills to get. And these two guys are Hall of Famers with potential. And what I mean by that is they have the work ethic, they have the character, and they come from a good program. Number one is Jackson Powers Johnson. I said that before. Mm-hmm. He'll be a Pro Bowl center. And then my guy, who is going to be the best wide receiver in this draft. I don't care about the divas that's up there is playing. This guy is a champion. He's a winner. His name is Lob McConkey. And I'm letting you know, even though, like you guys said, at 5'11", he might struggle. No, let me tell you something. That shuttle drill he run, that kid can get off the line of scrimmage, and he can leave a defensive back in the dirt and make a cut. And Brandon Bean stated, he has everything that Brandon Bean asked for. He has the work ethic. He has the yak yards. He's selfless. He's a tough kid. And at the same time with Josh Allen, I promise you, this guy will be the best player, best wide receiver in the whole draft because he's a champion. The lights is not big for this kid. He played at Georgia. He played in the national championship games, I think, 3 times. So the stage, the lights is not big. Some of these guys you can get and bring in here, and these guys could be divas, and they could Twitter, and they could be all this and that by mouth. But when it comes between those lines, I'm going to tell you this, and I'm going to use Steve Tasker for a perfect example. I remember when Steve first got here, he played special teams, he was running, just smashing people. And then everybody kept saying, why do they got him as a wide receiver when he plays special teams? And then all of a sudden, Steve had an opportunity to play wide receiver. People didn't think he was good because they said he's too little. Steve was killing people. And he helped us get to the Super Bowl because no one could stop him with his shuttle run. Steve knew how to wiggle. That's how he knew how to wiggle the special teams to get on the smash key. But I'm not blowing him up. I'm just being honest. You know what I mean? So, and I appreciate this call. I mean, appreciate you taking my call. I just want to say this last thing. What people don't understand is what Brandon Bean said about what we already have in our wide receiver room. He knows he has a Justin Shorter. He knows he has a Terrell Shaver 6'6", 6'4". He knows he has a Brian Thompson at 6'3", along with these other guys. So the McConkey kid, I'm telling you, if you get this kid right now, he's the perfect fit for what we want to do. I love you guys. I love MSG, WG, and I love the fans. And I love you two guys, man, forever. And thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks,
sure,
Butch.
Sure thing, Butch. Look, I'll be the first to tell you, if the Bills draft Ladd McConkey, I am not going to be disappointed at all. I like him as a receiver. I really do. And I think he'll have a productive NFL career. I just think they have a guy that's very similar to him in Khalil Shakir. Now, that's not to say find a place to put him on the field.
Right.
I'm not saying that.
They may have more faith in him as a deep threat and a guy that can play outside on the numbers or on the numbers in the pros. They may believe he can do that. And he is smart enough, and he proved it at Georgia to play different spots in the offense. They moved him around a little bit, no question. He was in the slot. He was inside, outside. And he caught the ball. So he's got a lot of what they like. And maybe you're right, Butch, the Bills may believe that Shorter or Shavers or Mac Hollins or what have you can be the outside guy and they can plug McConkey in. I'm just anxious. I don't think Khalil Shakir's going to sit down.
No.
So I want to know what their offense is going to look like with these two guys on the field.
And it's not – and look, I'll be the first to tell you, Joe Brady has basically told the scouting department, you know, I don't have a type that I need. Like, I don't need a guy with A, B, and C for his traits. I just need football players. Get me good football players, and I'll make it work. That's music to the ears of scouts. But in a receiver class chock full of different kinds of talent, maybe this is a year where you could be a little picky. And try to get an ideal fit for what you feel is still missing from your receiving corps. Now, that doesn't mean if you draft Ladd McConkey, you can't win a lot of football games, because the guy's proven you can win a lot with him. And look, again, I'll say it again. I love Ladd McConkey. I watch more Georgia football than any other college team in the country. I was at the Ole Miss game in November when the Bills were playing on Monday night. I got down there for that game on a Saturday night. You know, because my son goes to school there. I watch more Georgia than any other college football team. I love Ladd McConkey. I also love me some A.D. Mitchell, who also played at Georgia and had a touchdown in every single college football playoff game of his career.
Which there were multiple.
And had a touchdown for every five receptions for Texas last season. So he had 11 touchdowns.
Here's the thing. You're right. McConkey might be the guy. If he is, I think, because we don't know what the Bills, and I've said it a ton during this process, we don't know what they think about not only the guys that are out there, the prospects. We don't know what they think about each of these individual guys, A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas Jr., all these guys. We don't know. And we don't even know now, obviously, we don't even know what they think about their own guys. Curtis Samuel, Mac Hollins.
They're all new.
We figure we got an idea what they think about Kincaid and Shakir. Okay, maybe Terrell Shavers and Justin Shorter. Okay, they might probably have a good handle on those guys. And maybe they know things about their offense and what it's going to look like so they can go out and get a Ladd McConkey. We may think he's a little bit redundant, but they may not share that. So, yes, if they get McConkey, I'll be excited too, because I think the kid can play. I think he can really play, along with these other guys that we've been talking about. They're going to get a good guy. Even if they stay put at 28, even if they trade down to like 33, 35, they're going to get a really good player. So the only question for Brownie and I, really, and for a lot of Bills fans, is which of these wide receivers is it going to be? Because we all believe that's who it's going to be.
Right. I mean, I don't know if people have given much thought to this, but Steve makes a very good point. We don't know how any of these guys are going to fit, because the only guy in the receiver room who caught a pass from Josh Allen last season is Khalil Shakir. I mean, Kincaid's in the tight end room. Shakir is the only receiver left on the roster who caught a pass from Josh Allen last year.
That's,
think about that.
That's not nothing.
So it really does create a bit of a jumble there where, as much as we pay attention, until we see it on the field this spring, we don't know how the pecking order is going to work or what the roles are going to be. And a lot of those are probably going to have to be earned, knowing the way Sean McDermott operates. So that it's going to be fascinating, not only to see what they add next week, but how it's all going to look on the field.
Yeah, how it's going to come together. But you do even from the outside and from casual, you know, like me, I'm a fan of about the level of a soccer mom, right? So you want to be able to sit back and have most of the time on a great team, you're even casual fans can look at him and say, wow, well, they got this guy that can go deep and that guy that can catch underneath and this guy that makes contested catches and this guy that gets open, this guy that catches crossing routes, this guy that catches all that stuff. You want to, because your team has to figure out different ways to win football games because they're going to be playing against different teams every week. And every week a team's going to force them to beat them left-handed, so to speak. We're going to take away what you do best, so we're going to force you to beat us with this. And if you do a lot of stuff really well, well, now you can see what happens. The defense is like, well, we can't. Forget it. We're done. So when you sit back and look at it and you start seeing a bunch of guys doing the same thing on an offense, or at least our perception is that they do the same thing, like Shakir and McConkey, it starts to throw a wrench into that thought process. That's what we're having trouble getting our mind around today.
Let's go to Mark in West Seneca here before the break. What do you got for us, Mark?
Hey, guys, real quick. I have a question. My question is for you guys. What do you think Bean would be more inclined to do? And then my question is, what would you guys do, Brownie and Steve here, with this scenario? If I'm not expecting Thomas to be there at 18 to 20, okay, but I think there's a good possibility Mitchell may be there, okay? Do you think Brandon's more inclined to move up the board and grab that kid around there, depending on what assets he would have to do? Or do you think he's more inclined to stay back at 28 and maybe pick a guy? McConkey's a lot is the name that I've been thinking of at 28. Do you think that's overdrafting him there a little bit? And I know there's been a lot of talk about him now. He's very similar to Shakir and Samuel, and how that might be a little bit of a negative. I look at that as a positive. The kid's a separator. To me, separators are always a little bit more important than guys who can just run deep. And to have three guys in Samuel, Shakir, and McConkey, theoretically you got three guys there that you can line up anywhere in the offense. You can interchange them, move them around. That's versatility that I think puts the defense on their heels a little bit. And you can always pick up a guy who can run fast and stretch the field. We may have that guy in Shorter right now. So I'm just very curious as to what you think Bean would be more inclined to do. And then if you guys were pulling the trigger, Steve and Chris, what would you do?
Yeah,
thanks, guys.
I think it comes down to two factors, Mark, and I'll be quick so Steve can chime in before we go to break here. The two factors are, as far as Bean's concerned, what's his history? And he reiterated it again today. He sleeps better at night on Thursday night after round one if he goes and gets his guy rather than missing out on him. And that's why he has felt prompted to move up a couple of spots, three or four spots, whatever the case might be. You know, he leapfrogs Dallas last year. He jumps up two spots to get Kyrie Elam the year before. So that's his history. He has also sat and stood pat. He did that on the Greg Rousseau draft at pick 30. I think it's dependent upon, so his history says he's going to jump, but is this year different because the receiver class is so deep? So I think it's going to be predicated on, yeah, that guy's really good up there and we like him. Adonai Mitchell's still on the board, but how close is the next guy to him? Is he three spots away on their board? Because if he is, that means they'd be pretty happy with that guy too. So maybe he just sits there and says, I'm going to stay at 28. I think those are the two biggest factors. I like A.D. Mitchell more than McConkey enough where I could see myself trying to at least put a package together to talk to somebody.
It's my thought that the Bills will probably move up to someplace like number 23, where Minnesota is. Minnesota's got number 11, and they've got number 23. Now, if Minnesota doesn't package those two and pop up to get one of the quarterbacks, like there's a lot of speculation that they could, then depending on who that is, if that's Arizona at 23, if they go jump up to number 4 to get Arizona, or if they make a deal with New England to go up and get the guy, and they're at number 3, and it's New England, New England's not going to trade with Buffalo at the number 23 spot to give Buffalo a weapon to use against them. But if it's Arizona, they may. You may be able to get Arizona to trade down twice if the picks are right to go from 28 up to 23 where Minnesota is. Maybe Philly will do it.
Maybe Philly at 22.
At 22 as well.
Howie Roseman doesn't mind moving around.
Right. So that's my thought. I don't think the Bills will drop back. I think they may go up 4 or 5 spots at the most, maybe 6 to Philly, to where right behind Miami is. So that's my thought, and I think that's what I would do if I was Brandon, if his guy was still there, whether it was A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr., or, you know, make your pick. Brian Thomas Jr. is not going to be there. But A.D. might. Ladd McConkey will be there. And you can wait on maybe on those two guys. Mm-hmm. Even back at 28. So I think if he gets antsy, I think it's the most likely scenario is that he moves up a handful of spots or thereabouts to grab the guy he wants.
Got to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to share some of head coach Sean McDermott's comments that he made when he addressed the media a little bit earlier today. Not only did he address the aftermath of the Diggs trade, but where they go moving forward. You want to hear that when we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. We mentioned that head coach Sean McDermott addressed the media shortly before we came on the air. Wanted to play some of his comments for you, including his comments on the aftermath of the Diggs trade and where the team goes from here. Here is Buffalo's head coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, right? Steph's a great player. Really enjoyed our time together. Won a lot of games, and he was a huge factor in winning those games. I think we'll miss him. You never replace a player like Steph Diggs, and we wish him well, Steph and his family. So hard to move on from a player like that. And now we go back to, looking at our roster and excited for the opportunity that we have in that room for guys to step up.
Have you had conversations with Josh regarding the move, and what are those conversations? What's been the tenor of those conversations?
Yeah, I mean, you always have conversations, sometimes multiple conversations, and you communicate, again, multiple times, and you collaborate. This was a big decision, so one we didn't take lightly, and I'll leave Josh's reaction. I know Josh is going to speak, I believe, after me somewhere here. So, but again, just trying to do what's best for the team, both in the near term and the long term.
Brandon, you said what happened that, you know, maybe you're not better today, but this was a move for the future. And from a coach's perspective, going into these meetings and talking to your team for the first time, what's your message to them? Obviously, he was very well-liked in the locker room.
Well, again, that, you know, wasn't really around the team when this all unfolded. But really the message is for us right now is belief in who we are. Everything starts with belief, right? And anything you do and mindset, looking at the opportunity that's in front of us this season. And then just being present of, and our focus being on where we are today and what we have to do to get ourselves ready to play. And if you shortchange that process or shortcut the process, you're going to make a big mistake. So those are the things we can control right now. It's just being present, putting in the work, and we're doing a lot right now just in terms of educating our team, building our culture, because you got to do that every day, right, and every year. It's a year-to-year league, and so trying to build that respect, the love that our guys need to have for one another, And what comes out of that is that trust that we're going to need going through the journey of a season, and that's important. So that's really the true substance of what leads to success. That's the foundation, right? So that's really where our focus is right now.
This is a major reset, maybe the first big one in your time here, given the players, aside from Steph, that you've lost, never mind your defensive secondary and Mitch Morse. How do you treat this season in the trajectory of this team, given what the losses were?
Well, again, you never replace a player or a person like Steph. And there were others, too, as I know there's a long line here of veteran players in particular, some of whom were captains and players that we and people that we leaned on for a number of years. And they added so much to our culture, our leadership. And so, number one, we wish them well. Number two is that's the reality sometimes of the NFL in balancing a salary cap. And those are tough decisions. So, again, you never replace people like that, players like that. No two players or people are the same. But, again, it's an opportunity for people to take on new roles, to stretch themselves a little bit, to hold people accountable, you know, for somebody else. And I think a big piece of this is you don't just hire leaders or bring in leaders. You're developing leaders the whole time, you know, kind of underneath the water. And that's part of what we work on as a staff of developing leaders. And quite honestly, I think we need more of those in society as it is, right? So I think a lot of us would agree with that. But that's a big piece of what we do in the offseason in particular. Our player development team, myself, our coaching staff is not just developing the player but developing the person. And because those leaders aren't always going to be here. And so they're going to graduate at some point, like they have in some cases, and you need people who are ready to step in and step up.
Coach, you talk about, you know, you build this sustained success from the ground up. And, again, how challenging can it be, or what challenges have you already faced, without those core pieces in your locker room?
Well, we're just getting started, right? So, again, I think our focus it has been where it needs to be, Mookie, and that is on just starting with what's right in front of us and our off-season program. I give a lot of credit to our strength and conditioning coaches, our medical staff, our sports science staff, led by Joe Collins and Eric Ciano and Nate Bresky, respectively. They spent a lot of time this off-season doing research, looking to innovate in different ways that we haven't maybe before, not changing our core of what we've done and been about in terms of what we do in the off season, but, hey, keeping things fresh, right? What new is out there? Testing our process in those areas as well. And so I've been very pleased with the amount of work that's been put in by those staff members so that when the players came back, there's some new things that they can see and be a part of and that will hopefully then be put into place to make them as good as they can possibly be.
Sean, where have you landed on who's calls the defensive plays this year?
Yeah, so it'll be a while. It's on my radar, but you can ask me about it. Probably the best thing to do is ask me about it in training camp because I'm not going to make a decision before then. There's just more important things. It is important, but there's just more important things right now. In front of us with the team being here and then the draft next week and full confidence in Bobby. He's off to a great start. He's extremely organized, type A personality, as you guys know Bobby and the players know Bobby, and we'll never lack for energy in that department.
Follow up on that, you have a lot of new assistants. When you got them together for the first time this offseason, what kind of tone did you set in terms of this is how you want things done and setting that culture?
Yeah, I've been very impressed, Mark, with that. And when you look at the way people collaborate, right? Unselfish, respectful, team-centered. The staff is off to a great start. The new members of the staff have been very good additions. They keep their heads down. They work. They collaborate. It's been very impressive to this point, and that collaboration is good to see. And everyone's got a role, right? And they all have been anchoring their role, and the coordinators have been leading. And I think that's huge to this point.
All right, that's head coach Sean McDermott with some of his comments from today. We do have to take a break here, but when we come back, we'll see if we can squeeze in a phone call and maybe some final thoughts on the tweet sheet next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Back here on One Bills Live, one segment to go here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we go to the phones, and we're going to squeeze in Stan in Buffalo. You got about a minute, Stan. What do you got?
Hey, I'll go really quick, guys. I appreciate at least taking this. I like two guys in the first round. If we can't get one of these two guys by moving up the board, that would be Brian Thomas or Neighbor. Then I think we go back into the second round, top of the second round, get a different type of guy, maybe an Xavier Worthy who can become another Smoke Brown, keep our second, and I'll call back another time on what your thoughts are, Brownie, as far as what it would cost us to get up to get a Neighbor or a Thomas. Have a good one, guys.
Yeah. To get Neighbors, it's going to cost significantly more than it will be to maybe move up and get Thomas.
Right.
And I don't know if Brandon Bean wants to part with that amount of draft capital to do it, because you got to get into the top probably six picks to have a shot at Neighbors.
You have to get in the top 10. And if you traded, yeah, you can't even do it if you trade this 28 and the 60. And you certainly wouldn't trade. You could trade maybe this year's one, next year's one, and next year's two from Minnesota. To get neighbors. You're talking about two ones and a two. Maybe
to get up to 16, 17, you could use your two this year, your one this year, and your two next year. And you can get up to 16, 17 if Thomas is still sitting there on the board. But likelihood, not likely.
It would take this year's one and next year's
two.
Two, for sure. And it would be Minnesota's two, which is going to be like at 38.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of money.
Tough to do.
A lot of money. It's a lot of capital.
Yeah. Do we want to do it? Maybe. I don't know. Got to see how the board falls. A lot to happen in front of them for sure. That's about it for us today. We'll have more exciting draft talk tomorrow. And if you want to see any more of the coverage of who addressed the media today, Josh Allen, Terrell Bernard, you can head over to BuffaloBills.com for that. Otherwise, we'll see you tomorrow at 1 with the last mock draft and Greg Cosell.